Electronics Corporation, and lots of others. And representing the defendants in this case, and the defendants who also happen to be the appellants, Mr. Ross, we'll hear from you.
May it please the court. I represent the appellants, defendants in this matter. In this case, the Mississippi Attorney General asserts claims on behalf of the state of Mississippi in its proprietary capacity and on behalf of local governments and private consumers of LCD products. LCD products is the glass that goes into big screen TVs, notebook computers.
We've read the briefs now. We've read the briefs, and so you just get prompt to your argument. And
okay.
Probably the best use of your time.
This is a nationwide class action. None of the defendants are from Mississippi. Most of the defendants are from Asia. The Attorney General seeks restitution under 75-24-11, which says specifically that the court may make judgment as necessary to restore any person in interest any monies which may have been acquired in violation of the Consumer Protection Act. The Attorney General also seeks punitive damages on behalf of Mississippi residents, including local governments.
Now, what are you reading from now? What statute are you reading from?
I read from 75-24-11, and I was referring to the complaint.
Okay.
I'm referring to the complaint, which is the record, page 98, where he specifically cites 75-24-11, and then he also says where he's seeking restitution, and he also says that he's seeking punitive damages on behalf of Mississippi residents.
Where'd all that money go that the defendants have already paid?
There was a settlement in California,
right,
in the MDL. It's my understanding a fund has been set up so that people can make claims on that settlement. The money is to go to the individuals. It's the same thing here. The money would go to the individuals, and that's why the individuals are the real parties in interest.
So the restitution would go to individual Mississippi residents, Mississippi companies that had made these purchases? I just don't see how, the way the pleadings are now, how the money could be distributed.
Well, the statute is clear, Your Honor, that the money goes to those who have suffered a loss, 75-24-11. In fact, those individuals, those entities, natural or corporate citizens or local governments, have a right to sue themselves. The money cannot go to the state pursuant to the statute. And in Caldwell, this court looked at the Louisiana Monopolies statute and to determine who the real parties in interest were, whose cause of action it really was. Now, the defendants here acknowledge that the state is a real party in interest as to injunctive relief, as to punitive damages that they are seeking based upon transactions with the state, and as to civil penalties. But as to the restitution claim, and as to the punitive damage claim based upon transactions with persons other than the state, there is no authority in Mississippi law for that money to go into the state coffers. The only authority in Mississippi law is for the money to go to the individual. 75-24-11 says that specifically.
Actually, wouldn't that render your reading of 75-24-11 that way, 75-24-15, superfluous? Because 75-24-15 provides for the private individuals to get the money. 25-11 allows the state to get it. If your reading of 25-11, can you answer that?
Yes, I will. 75-24-15 allows individuals a private right of action for damages, and there are some procedural requirements. They have to contact the Attorney General first. 75-24-11 specifically talks about restitution, and it specifically says the court may make judgments as may be necessary to restore any person in interest any monies which may have been acquired by a practice prohibited by this chapter. Restitution means to restore money to people who allegedly have been wronged. And if you looked at 75-24-13, we put this in our brief, it's also got a provision in there where the court can set up a receivership if he wants to figure out how to distribute that money to the persons who have suffered loss.
What do you do with the Mississippi authority, that the 2 points that they make, that it would be unconstitutional to pass it on in the way that you say, and the fact that they have a clear directive to keep the recovery, and it's as shown by the authority in Pickering and another.
And the constitutional provision? Mm-hmm. I think it's Section 100 of the Constitution talks about money owned by the state. You have to determine whose cause of action this is when you're talking about the individuals and the local governments. The state owns its cause of action with regard to transactions with the state, but not with regard to individuals and not with regard to local governments. The Pickering case simply said that when it's money that belongs to the state, that it's actually the state's money, the Attorney General has to deposit it into a state fund. He can't let the defendant send it directly to an attorney representing
the state can't rob a private citizen of his private cause of action. And if all of this money went to the state, his private claim is barred by res judicata and can't claim under his own cause of action. It's a matter of theft. Or you could put it another way, the state does not have standing to take away that right of the party, which it would do through res judicata.
If the money was deposited in the state, that's exactly right, Your Honor. And talking about making...
He would have been harmed, and he would not have been made whole at all, and the state would have ridden his claim of action to enhance the coffers of the state, which is unheard of.
And Section 15 of the Consumer Protection Act, that individual citizen would have de facto lost the right to go under Section 15.
Yeah. And there may be some other way around it, but...
Now, under Caldwell, considering that these individuals and the individual governments, local governments, are the real party in interest, it is clear that this is a mass action. The real question is about the general public exception, which Caldwell did not directly address.
Now, why do you say so emphatically that it is a mass action?
Judge, there are more than 100 claimants. The amount in controversy is greater than $5 million. It's common issues of law and fact, and there's minimal diversity. And same thing that existed in Caldwell. Now, with regard to the general public exception, which Caldwell did not address, or at least the published opinion did not address, it has two express statutory requirements before it kicks in. Number one, all of the claims must be asserted on behalf of the general public. By definition, when they assert claims on behalf of individual citizens and the money is going to go to the individual citizens, and not every Mississippian bought one of these products, it's not on behalf, all of the claims are not asserted on behalf of the general public.
So, I mean, essentially you're saying that once you determine that it is a mass action, then that answers the second question as to whether it is a falls within the public exception. Because if it is a mass action, it cannot fall within the exception of public exception.
That's the way the statute reads. Now, when you look at the legislative history, it's expressly addressed. Mm-hmm.
I don't want the legislative history if the statute reads that way.
You don't have to. You can stop right there.
And the legislative history doesn't tell you one thing about the plain language of the statute. And if the statute is not some way ambiguous, you certainly don't need to reside to legislative history that is written by staff members up there that don't have any particular idea about what other staff people and what other senators or congressmen thought.
I agree completely, Your Honor.
Doesn't it also render the public exception really superfluous in the statute? And aren't we supposed to give some meaning to the public exception?
Well, the statute says what it says. And if Congress inartfully drafted it such that you can't have a mass action and the general public exception be applicable. That's what Congress said is the law. That's the first point. Second point, there is language in the history, and I know Judge Jolly doesn't feel like we need to reach it, and I agree with him, but there's language in the history that you have to have a specific statute saying it's on behalf of the general public. That is a Mississippi legislative decision as to what the general public is. It's not for the courts, and it's not for the attorney general. It's not for the district judge. There has to be a specific statute, and all the claims have to be brought pursuant to that statute. There is no specific statute, and all the claims are not brought on behalf.
And that was essentially acknowledged by the district judge here, who had to string together a bunch of statutes to finally find that it was brought in behalf of the public.
I think the way we phrased it in our brief, that he had to cobble them together, and that's not what the general public exception.
There's a specific statute that authorizes it.
All of the claims.
Right.
All of the claims.
Yes, there are more than 100 plaintiffs, but isn't there really just one plaintiff, the state of Mississippi, or the action by the Attorney General?
No, Your Honor, not when you look at Caldwell. The Attorney General.
Well, those plaintiffs were specifically identified. They had a commonality of interest. They were all the same kind of insurance claimants. You don't have that here. We don't know what you have here. I don't know what you have here.
Well, I mean, the people that have been harmed here are an identifiable class. They are the purchasers of this product. Just as they were in Caldwell, they were purchasers of a particular insurance policy. They didn't say, and here you have the class of those that are harmed who are clearly, unmistakably identified as purchasers of this product. Same thing.
Is that
same
your answer, thing. Mr. And Ross, do you agree with Judge Grady's testimony?
I actually do, Your Honor. I'll point out in Caldwell, they weren't identified at the time. This court sent it back down and said the district court can figure out if they can be identified or not. I'll also point out that CAFA itself, in the definition of class member, first, CAFA says that a mass action is a class action for purpose of CAFA, and the CAFA statute itself for the definition of class members says claimants or class members, whether identified or unidentified.
But the class action definition in Mississippi is nowhere near what the federal class action requires. So I don't know why you can just sort of decide it's a class action or class members.
Well, CAFA has, it's a confusion statute, I'll admit, but it can be, you have a definition of a mass action, you have a definition of a class action. This case actually meets both definitions. It's clearly a mass action under CAFA. It's also a representative class action because Section 25, in this action, he's seeking injunctive relief, and the court has the authority to order.
Why do you want to waste your time arguing that it's a class action?
Well,
I mean, it's clearly you're on the short end of the stick on that, but you're on the long end of the stick, in my view, on a mass action. And that's your case.
I'll just say very briefly on the class action, resemble should be taken in a functional capacity. He is representing individual Mississippians just like a class representative would, a private class representative.
There is no similar statute in Mississippi to Rule 23.
There is not a similar statute with the procedural requirements of Rule 23.
Can we get back to the public exception?
Yes, ma'am.
I can't find any authority that supports your reading out of the public, saying that if you get to the mass action on the real party in interest, that you then get rid of the public exception. In fact, all the cases around the country and the law reviews have stated the opposite. Can you give me any authority for your interpretation?
The first authority, Your Honor, would be the language of the statute itself. You read it, it says what it says. It says it has to be all the claims, and it's not all the claims. You read it, it says it has to be pursuant to a statute specifically authorizing an action on behalf of the general public. That type of statute does not exist in Mississippi. I suppose a legislature could pass a statute saying the Attorney General can sue on behalf of the general public in this regard, and then if all the claims were in that regard, I suppose that even if the money went to individuals, if the legislature made that determination, they could do that. But that, you don't have to get there,
so,
because we don't have
no that
here.
But there is no published authority, either cases or law reviews, that supports your position, though. You're relying on the text, right?
I'm relying on the text, and as far as other authorities, they only briefly
Give each side 3 more minutes, please.
Okay. As far as other authorities, Judge, and we put this in our brief, the authorities relied upon by the district court, they basically decided that there was not federal jurisdiction by looking at the case as a whole rather than claim by claim. And a couple of them along the way said they referred to the general public exception in a very cursory manner, but their reasoning was based upon saying we look at the case as a whole and the only party, the real party in interest, is the state. They just ignored the individuals. In a couple of the cases, the Moody case for the district court.
Okay, well, let me see if this is right. With respect to, if you had determined that this is a class action, if Mississippi had a class action statute, and then you come to the public exception, then you can apply the public exception to this case if there was a class action. It just happens that whenever you determine that it is a mass action, you have already decided the first issue that relates to the public exception, and that is that all claims are not for the public of the state of Mississippi.
That's correct.
So if it were a class action, it would apply. I mean,
and the statute,
and we wouldn't have jurisdiction.
The statute says you have to have 100. It doesn't say you can have too many claims.
I should say if it were a class action relating to all the state entities.
Oh, I understand, Your Honor. You're correct. Now, the main argument of the district judge, the main reasoning of the district judge in applying the general public exception, is that this case is too big. Well, the statute says you have to have 100. It doesn't say that there's a maximum. And this court has recognized in Caldwell and other cases that the purpose is to be liberally construed to provide a federal forum for very large actions involving large numbers of claimants and out-of-state defendants to avoid the abuses of state court. In this regard, I think that Judge Higginbotham summed it up well in the Katrina Canals case. He said, we are persuaded that the state cannot pull these citizens under its claimed umbrella of protection in frustration of a congressional decision to give access to federal district courts to defendants exposed to these private claims, presumably for reasons not far removed from those that led the first Congress to confer diversity jurisdiction.
That was a totally different situation.
That was a class action, but it was still
that was a class action. I believe I was on that.
You were on the panel, Your Honor.
My question is, if we do decide as you would decide, do you put us at odds with both the Seventh and the Ninth Circuits, the only two circuits at issue that have dealt with this? Do we create a split with the Seventh and Ninth Circuits?
I think a split already exists based upon Caldwell.
But Caldwell didn't address the public exception.
It did not address the general public exception, but those cases did not address the general public exception directly. They based their holding, the Ninth Circuit was a class action case, it was not a mass action case, and it based its holding on the reading of the definition of class action. The Seventh Circuit just disagreed with Caldwell, said we're going to take a case as the whole approach rather than a claim-by-claim approach, and it just disagreed with Caldwell.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ross. You saved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Chalakowski? Chalakowski. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did. Thank you. And may it please the court, my name is Dave Chalkowski, and with me at council table is Jeffrey Morgan and Meredith Aldrich from the Attorney General's office. This court should affirm the district court's remand order in this case. This case is not a class action. It's not a mass action. And even if it were a mass action, it does not qualify for the general public exception. This case is a direct statutory parens patriae action seeking injunctive relief, civil penalties, and restitution to the state.
Your complaint does not mention parens patriae.
That's correct, Your Honor. It doesn't.
And it was not raised until it got to the Fifth Circuit, which I suppose you probably could raise it, but you didn't even raise it in your complaint. So why do you find it necessary now to rely on that doctrine when it was not alleged in your complaint?
Your Honor, the language of...
And I should add that your appellate brief is built altogether on that doctrine.
Correct, Your Honor. What's required for a parens patriae action is that the Attorney General-led litigation be brought on behalf of the state of Mississippi and its citizens. We've alleged that in the complaint, and that is a parens patriae language.
There are exceptions to it, and the exceptions are that a parens patriae does not apply, generally speaking, to actions that an individual could assert in his own behalf. And all of these claims, the purchases of this particular product, could assert their claims. And in fact, you could get your plaintiff and ignore the state and bring a class action, just a private class action. Why didn't you do that?
First of all, we can't bring a class action in Mississippi. There is no...
Well, you could in the federal court.
Under the parens patriae authority, we don't need to bring a class action.
Okay.
And the issue is that we've asserted a statutory basis for parens patriae. And certainly that is an issue in this case.
What do you say about the exception to the Parents Patriae Act that it is not appropriate if the individual can assert his own claims? And here it seems quite clear that the individual could assert his own claims.
Yeah, and this has been the history of Parents Patriae antitrust action since 1972 when the Supreme Court decided Hawaii, where there was an absence of statutory authority for the Attorney General to bring the claim. There was a problem with that, and the decision was that the legislature had favored individual recovery. But that changed when legislatures began to imbue the Attorney General with direct authority to seek that same relief. And so you didn't have the same issues of...
Mississippi doesn't have that statute, though.
They don't have... And you're speaking of the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act, I think. Yes, Your Honor, it's not the same thing, but it's the functional equivalent. And the reason is because the statute specific, both the MAA and the MCPA, provide direct statutory authority for the Attorney General to seek monetary relief.
For himself?
For the state of Mississippi. No. Not just the proprietary claims, but
no, wait a minute. I thought they have the authority to seek penalties on behalf of themselves, penalties, but not damages.
So I would direct the court's attention to Judge Jolly, you're speaking about Section 7521.7, I believe, the penalty for violation of antitrust law. Under 7521.37, all such suits shall be brought in in the name of the state of Mississippi upon the relation of the Attorney General
for
appropriate legal proceedings and suits at law or in equity. Now, this is a vast difference between the Mississippi statute and the statute at issue in Caldwell, which only provided injunctive relief power to the Attorney General.
There is nothing whatsoever here I mean, they could bring suits at law or in equity, but suits at law would also be suits that would not necessarily involve, would not provide monetary relief for individuals.
Well, I differ on that in this respect. If you look at footnote 8 of Caldwell, the court said that the state's proprietary claims, the states where the state was injured, belong under the private person's statute. In other words, the state can claim its own injuries, make a claim for its own injuries, but that goes under the private section of the statute. So the only thing left to sue at law for, which legal relief is monetary relief, equitable relief.
Yeah, but how does that possibly help you in terms of a mass tort? Because you'll still be litigating more than 100 monetary claims based on common set of facts and law. You still walk right into mass torts, do you not?
You don't, because the real party and interest test is not who benefits. It's who has the power to assert the relief requested. And the power to assert the relief requested in the Caldwell case was not given to the legislature. The Attorney General. The Attorney General could only sue for injunctive relief directly under the statute. Here, the Attorney General can sue for monetary relief, and that power is granted specifically by the statute. And the defendant's test about who benefits directly from the lawsuit runs contrary to this court's precedent and the Caldwell decision itself. The court in Caldwell specifically stated that the policyholders in that case were the real parties in interest because the plain language of the statute makes clear that individuals have the right to enforce the provision allowing the recovery of treble damages. See, the problem in that case was that the Attorney General asserted a claim for treble damages, and the statute only allowed him to recover injunctive relief.
So your reading of that statute means that the state of Mississippi, irrespective of whether it is harmed, can engage in any trust litigation on behalf of even an unwilling harmed individual. Is that right? They can sue any company anytime with respect to whoever is harmed, whether they're willing to be sued or not, but they can just go out and file these lawsuits. Is that what you're saying?
The Attorney General's office is charged with a duty to protect the citizens of Mississippi in that very manner, Your Honor.
That'd be a very broad reading of it. Give the Attorney General that kind of authority.
What other precedent besides Caldwell would say that it's not who benefits, it's who has the power to assert the relief? You said it was contrary to our precedent in addition to Caldwell.
I think it's black letter law in this circuit that the real party in interest is the party that has the right to seek the relief requested, not the party that benefits.
I'm asking where the black letter is.
I believe the site is to the Weberg decision, I can't remember the name of the other. They're cited both at the same time in our brief.
Thank you.
The Caldwell court also, in footnote 5 of its decision, expressly left unaddressed the question of whether a state law that expressly permits the Attorney General to bring a parens patriae antitrust action for monetary relief could shield a representative action from CAFA removal. That question hasn't been addressed by this court. But the Caldwell court, in fact, put its thumb on the scale with regard to how that question should be answered. In that footnote, there's a robust discussion of the history of parents patriae actions in the context of antitrust. Started with the Hawaii and the Frito-Lay case, where the common law constitutional parents patriae power was too narrow in juxtaposition to the treble damages provisions allowed to private individuals to sue. The Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit, decided attorneys general don't have the standing to bring those cases when the clear indication from the legislature was to have private individuals bring those cases.
This case really Caldwell, but we just don't have the names of the plaintiffs yet?
No, it's not, Your Honor. And in Caldwell, we didn't have the names of the plaintiffs either.
But the specific people, specific people with the specific policy. I'm just asking if this is really just the same as Caldwell.
It's not, Your Honor. In Caldwell, the state did not have the statutory authority to bring the claim on behalf of individuals. And that's the big difference. That's the big difference between the view that defendants propose and the view of Mississippi. We're not saying that the real party in interest has anything to do with who ultimately benefits from the lawsuit. The question is, does the plaintiff here have the statutory authority to sue for the relief requested? And that's the state of Mississippi.
Your brief says that what will be done with this money is it will be given to the Attorney General and to the state of Mississippi.
Correct.
So you're saying that you are not suing on behalf of any individual. That's what your brief says.
Well, what are they going to do next? What's the state of Mississippi going to do? That's what I was trying to ask your opposing counsel.
Yes, and
like
so
receivership, so they distribute the money, or you can't just keep
the receivership option comes under the additional orders section of the MCPA, we haven't asked for a receiver in our complaint, so that's step number one. That's not a request that we've sought.
Do you not know what you do with the money?
No. Yes, I do know. The money is. Goes to the statute says that the money goes to a proper treasury, and then ultimately the legislature is to decide how that money is to benefit the public.
So the legislature could pass a bill and spend it on roads. It doesn't have to give it to people who purchased LCD objects during the relevant time period. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It does not have to give the money to the people who were actually harmed?
Well, it's not that the people who were actually harmed don't benefit. It's not a direct benefit. The people don't receive checks in the mail.
What is their benefit?
The benefit is to the general public, as it were. They get
a coupon, like a lot of these class actions. They get a coupon to go in to McDonald's and spend $2.
Well, maybe they get nothing, right? Isn't that what you're saying? That, like, maybe it benefits Mississippi, so you ratchet up the value of your state. But these individuals who were harmed, they might not get squat individually, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Why didn't you just say that?
All right. Now, how can you justify that if an individual has a private cause of action for the injury that is done to him, the state sues in his behalf, and takes all the money away from him and robs him of his cause of action?
Well, I don't think that's what happens.
He's been harmed, but yet the state has taken away his cause of action.
Well, the legislature has set up a dual recovery system. The state may sue to protect the interests of the public, and collaterally, individuals can sue under the statutes to protect their own interests.
Under Section 15, they can file their own claim, can't they?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
So if they think that the state's getting the better road is not good enough for them and they want to go through the trouble, they can file their own claim.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Wait a minute. How can they do that?
Because the statute...
The state is acting in their behalf. You've asserted that right. You have asserted the right to act. They no longer have a right to act if you are correct. You have assumed that injury, that right.
No, it's a different section of the statute.
I'm talking about the Consumer Protection Act in particular, in which you're suing under.
Mm-hmm. It's a different section.
And the antitrust as well. I mean, I always thought the people that were, that an injury was redressed by monetary relief to the person harmed. But you're telling me that that's not the case.
Well, under common law principles, that may be true, Your Honor, but this is a statutory action, and there are two separate statutory provisions for who has the power to sue and for what.
But do they file their separate action against the fund, the little kitty the state of Mississippi gets, or are they still allowed to sue the defendants? And if so, why, if they're already being represented and their harm has already been compensated by an award?
And one thing that I'd like the court to understand is that when we filed this lawsuit, there was no private benefit conferred yet. I think the settlement in California just happened this past spring. People do have the right to pursue their own action in their own behalf. And that's demonstrated as by what happened in California.
But have y'all
assumed, you haven't answered my question, to recover some of the money that you may get from these defendants or to go directly against the defendants? Are you extinguishing their right to sue for their loss, for their TV or whatever, against whoever, whichever Taiwanese company made it?
No.
Either this or that.
Under the plain reading of the statute, that's not addressed, and it's a question I don't believe that's been answered by this court. But certainly under the statute, it creates a dual recovery system.
Where? How can it do it? In other words, a double recovery system?
Not necessarily, and you know the.
No double recovery here.
There is no double recovery, and that's
so
an issue.
Dual recovery, whatever that means. I don't know what you mean by dual recovery.
I thought I said double recovery.
Well, I mean dual recovery. I mean, the way I would understand it is, yes, the state can sue. The state can sue for injunctive relief. It can sue for any injury that it has incurred, and it can sue for civil penalties in violation of the state law. Now, maybe civil penalties. Now, beyond, and then the individual is the one who has been harmed by purchasing this overpriced product, and he can sue for his own personal monetary gain. But the state, having suffered no monetary loss, can't sue for that monetary loss of that individual who has the private cause of action. I mean, that's the way I would read the statute. But surely you can sue for your own. I mean, the state can sue for its own losses and all the purchases that it made because it's been injured.
But that's not right. The way you read the statute, is it? You believe that the state can sue for restitution interests for its people. And whether or not those are raised judicata as against those people's claim is not an issue before us here today.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. And that's the perfect way to put it. These issues can be addressed at the district court level, whether that's a federal court or the chancery court. Any overlapping recovery needs to be addressed at that level, and it's not an issue for federal jurisdiction.
Can you please address, assuming that the position that's been espoused, that real party and interest are these individuals, and that therefore this is a mass claim, can you please tell us why you still believe that the public exception would apply? Does the mass establishment of real party of interest of these individuals extinguish your ability to use the public exception?
No. In fact, I think it assumes that you've already decided that they would be the real parties in interest. Now, we disagree with that.
Because that may be what you're left with. You may be, perhaps, assuming arguendo, you lose on the mass claim point. Do you still have a public exception left? And please tell us why or why not.
Well, and I would like to start with the discussion that was brought up earlier, which is that the public exception would be rendered superfluous if it were determined that As long as there's a mass action, there's no general public exception. The general public exception is an exception to the mass action finding. And another point about that is that it's not an exception to the class action finding. It only applies to the mass action finding.
You know, I can tell you, what if you had a B2, a type B2, 23B2 action, you would not have to litigate the claims. Everybody would get, once you had determined liability, everybody would get the same amount of money in a Class 2 injunctive relief. You've been injured by, so, or you'd have to do a minimum amount of litigation that under B2 is not considered B3 type litigation. And consequently, you would have the public exception. If you did not have to litigate monetary claims of each of these more than 100 individuals, and if an injunctive relief could give you monetary relief, you would be entitled to the public, even you would be entitled to the public.
It's exception. It's a very interesting point Your Honor makes. It's just not applicable to the class action finding under CAFA. It is only applicable to the mass action finding. The other issue with regard to the general public exception is that Your Honor is correct that every court to
it would be applicable to the mass tort if you were simply asking for injunctive relief, the same amount of dollars for each individual. Everybody in Mississippi who has purchased this product has been harmed by X dollars. They sold them at a certain price. They bought it at a certain price. They bought so many. They get so much money. No litigation.
And that's
then you'd be entitled to the public exception.
Except that it would be irrelevant because you would not, if all we were asking for was injunctive relief, we wouldn't even be here.
No, but you would.
Because.
I'm sorry.
We wouldn't be here. And the point is, under Caldwell, the Caldwell court specifically determined that the claim for injunctive relief belonged to the state, and the state was the real party in interest. So the general public exception doesn't even come up. But you would be going against all the other circuits that have decided this issue.
So is it that you think that the real party of interest is what kicks in the public exception for it to apply rather than what cancels it out so it's not applicable?
That's correct. If the court determines that this is a mass action because that Mississippi is not the real party in interest and the complaint has not been properly pled, then does the court consider the general public exception. Which every court has considered it has ruled in favor of attorneys general. I see that my time has expired.
Your time is up, but we've been pretty busy questioning you. And
yes, Your Honor.
If you missed something you would like for us to hear that can be said in about a minute, we'll be receptive to it. But you don't have to use it if you don't need it.
Okay, Your Honor. I'll close. The Attorney General of Mississippi has brought this statutory Parents Patriae case seeking monetary relief on behalf of the state and its citizens, and in the name of Mississippi. And that's important under the case law that we've cited in our brief, the Mid-Atlantic Toyota case and the Texas versus Scott and Fetzer case. The state is therefore the real party in interest and has sought restitution, civil penalties, and injunctive relief to the state. As such, this is not a mass action under the meaning of CAFA, and this court should affirm remand to the Chancery Court. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Ross, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The statutory language does not allow the money to go to the state of Mississippi for injuries suffered by persons other than the state of Mississippi. The statutory language says to restore any person in interest monies which may have been acquired by means of any practice prohibited by this chapter. It's talking about restoring any person in interest. The state of Mississippi is not a person of an interest with regard to money damages suffered by another individual. Now, the general public exception, we sometimes overlook the second phrase in the general public exception. It says, all of the claims in the action are asserted on behalf of the general public. All of the claims are not asserted because the Mississippi substantive law says the claims belong to the individuals. But it doesn't just say all of the claims are asserted on behalf of the general public. It says, and not on behalf of individual claimants or members of a purported class. And not on behalf of individual claimants. That's very explicit. There may be situations where the general public exception applies, but this is not one of them. Congress said that a statute like the California law that existed at the time, which California has subsequently changed, is what they were thinking about. They said Congress also said explicitly in the history that the normal Consumer Protection Act that most states have, which Mississippi has, which is based upon the Model Act that was put out by a law organization or somebody, does not qualify. In the other cases around...
Do we pierce the complaint to decide that it's on behalf of individual claimants, or do we take the complaint at its word on the public exception point?
You take the statutory language that they rely upon by its plain language. On a removal like this, you take the facts that they assert, but you do not have to accept their legal conclusions. And in Caldwell...
But when they say, who is bringing the case? And they say it's Mississippi. And you said not on behalf of individual claimants. Well, they would say it's not on behalf of individual claimants. It's on behalf of Mississippi. Do we take them at their word, or do we pierce it under the public exception?
You have to determine the real party in interest, who the individual claimants
are. But
then
that makes it circular with the mass claimant thing, because you do the same analysis, and then there's never a circumstance that the public exception applies if the real party in interest is an individual.
The definition of the general public has to be determined by the Mississippi legislature, and the Mississippi legislature has not said that the attorney general can sue. There is no statute saying that he can sue on behalf of the general public to recover money and put it in the state coffers for losses suffered by individuals. Now, as far as the authority to sue issue, which he raised, he's waived that argument. First time we saw it was in his brief to this court. It was never brought up in the court below. That argument is waived. But even if it wasn't waived, counsel opposite is just plain wrong in saying that Caldwell turned on who had the authority to bring the suit. And Caldwell said, even assuming arguendo the attorney general has standing, they said, we need not address it. And they said, the issue is, Louisiana's argument that it is the only party in interest is belied by the petition it filed in state court, which makes it clear that it is seeking to recover damages suffered by individual policyholders. We need not address Louisiana's argument that Section 138 of the Monopoly Act gives the Attorney General authority to enforce all provisions of the Monopoly Act. Once again, even assuming arguendo that such an interpretation of state law is correct, it does not resolve the central issue in this appeal, whether the person who was injured in his business or property, in this case the policyholders, are the real parties in interest. Caldwell is on all fours with this case, and the general public exception is not applicable whatsoever because all of the claims aren't brought on behalf of the general public, and because there's no statute authorizing the attorney general to act on behalf of the general public to recover their claims and put it in the state coffers. The cases in the other jurisdiction, the general public exception is not sufluous. Cases in the other jurisdiction looked at it as a case as a whole. And when they looked at it as a case as a whole, in a cursory way, they would say it also satisfies the general public exception.
Okay, Mr. Ross, you have a red light. And that
Thank you,
concludes
Your Honor.
The argument and concludes the arguments before this panel. So this panel will stand adjourned.